Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you. Chose that you should exist. Chose you. Consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed. And we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all hearts, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way, and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be. That you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of. That you deserve the existence you have been given, or it would not have been granted to you. That you deserve all the love you can imagine, because love is what you are made out of. That you deserve all the light you can create in your life, because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light. For you are nothing else.
And now, you're listening to Revolutionary Life, right here on Blog Talk Radio. This is part two, same night, guys. We're here same night, 6/24, 6/14, June 14th. We're here a little bit later than usual because we had a little glitch when we started this show. So I actually had to cancel the last show and then do a part two so we could get the sound correct. We had some sound problems. People start texting me saying they weren't able to hear me. And I kind of thought something was going on. And so they confirmed that. So we're back. And if you were there in our last show, or if you're new to this show, this is Blog Talk Radio. This is Revolutionary Life. The program here is a podcast that deals with the issues that affect our lives every day. We just deal with them from a revolutionary point of view. Today, we're talking about the Democratic and Republican parties. And political parties, are they political parties in name only? That's the title. Democratic, Republican parties. Are they just parties, political parties, in name only? Now, we before we got that voice, before we got that sound problem in our previous attempt at this presentation, we had already pretty much laid out my concern here and the reason I brought this to you. But I'd like to begin it again, and this time I want to let you know. I have some history, guys. Some history. I got quite a few years of history, to tell the truth. Well over 10, close to 20, as an organizer, professionally trained organizer. That's right. So Gary, your host, that's me, have been a community organizer, a labor organizer, and a political organizer, trained in how to build those types of organizations, ground up, from the Constitution and bylaws to hitting the streets and organizing membership and support. All right? And so I just wanted to, from that point of view, I just wanted to talk about these so-called political parties that we have in this country. And I started with the Democratic Party because that's the one that really got me going. It seems to me, and in organizations that I've helped to build or been a part of, we had an arena inside our organizations. We had an arena for disputes. We had an arena for changing the whole platform of the organization. One person had a pass built inside of that organization where one person, not to mention 10, one person had the ability to change the platform of that organization, its direction, to tell the truth. That was a pass for one person, one member of that organization to make changes in that organization. We had forums, we had internal meetings, where we argue things out, where we argue with each other. I don't care if they broke down into fist fights. It all happened in-house, and that's my point. The organization had an arena for disagreement. It had an arena. It had a path for changing the platform of the organization for any individual, any member of it, built in as part of its structure. One of the reasons that exists, guys. One of the reasons you build a political party or any organization, I don't care if it's a book club, but particularly when you have an organization that is faced with an opposition party. And the Republican Party is supposed to be an opposition party. In fact, I remember when Obama was president of the United States, as the titular head of the Democratic Party, as a Democratic nominee, he became the titular head of the Democratic Party. The Republicans immediately announced, the Speaker of the Republican Party immediately announced that they were going to do everything they could to make Obama a one-term president. That's an opposition party. It refused to even meet with or hear with any nominees for Supreme Court Democratic Party put forth. They said it was too close to the election. If we get a new president, then the new president should have a chance to nominate his own Supreme Court. Our last president, ex-president Donald Trump, was able to submit people to the Supreme Court weeks before the election. Not months, weeks before the election. And so, and the Democrats, of course, met with these folks and had hearings with these Supreme Court nominees. The same thing they had asked the Republicans to do before the election, at least 6 weeks, I guess, or over a month before the election. Weeks before the presidential election of Donald Trump. And Joe Biden. The Democratic Party was hearing their nominees for the Supreme Court. The Democratic Party refused to do to them what they did to the Democratic Party. That's how the game is played, I guess, but that's not the point. The point is the Democratic Party is not a party. It's a goddamn social club, and I'll tell you why I said that. I built parties, organizations, and we've had knockdown dragouts and disagreements inside of the party you never know about. Because when we walked out the door, when that meeting was over, we walked out the door unified. Because we knew there was an opposition out there. We knew they were looking for cracks in the armor of our party that they could needle their way into and break our party apart. This Democratic Party, guys, got people within it. Both sides, progressives and conservatives inside of the Democratic Party, who, what I call, bring their dirty laundry out in the streets for everybody to see. Joe Manchin on one end. Then you got the AOCs and the Ill Omars and whatnot. These people get to the mics, they get a microphone in their face, and they want to express how better, how more progressive they are than the leader of their party. How their ideas are better than the leader of the party's ideas. Their way of going about doing things would have been different. When it comes to Israel, when it comes to immigration, when it comes to any issues, you get a chance to hear how they might differ with their own party and how in their party's approach to these issues. I don't need to hear that. All right? Nobody needs to hear that. What I said in the last presentation before we shut off, I said that there must be a reason that you bring your dirty laundry out in the streets for everybody to see. Your disagreements, your internal disagreements. And I told you, if there's an opposition out there and you have cracks in your armor and they can see your weaknesses, they're going to prey on those weaknesses. And you think I'm kidding? I'm making this up. Steve Bannon. You remember that name? Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon began for a short while. He was a member of the administration of Donald Trump's presidency. He was a member of that administration. Hey, guys, I'm pretty sure I'm coming through right now. So for those who want to call in, it is a call-in show, guys. But at a certain point, I will announce that call-in and open up my chat and everything for call-ins because I do set aside a part of my show for you. All right. But right now, I'm trying to catch up from when I was shut down a minute ago. And I think you guys can hear me fine now. It sounds to me like everything's working out now on this part two. And so the Democratic Party seems to have voices within it that disagree with the president, the titular head of the party, their nominee that won the office of president. That's okay. That's okay. Nothing's wrong with that. I've never been in an organization where everybody agreed on everything. But in the interest of unity, in the interest of unity of will, understanding that there's an opposition out there just looking for an opportunity to break your party up and tear it apart. We didn't put our dirty laundry out in the street. Every time we got to a mic, we didn't talk about our ideas, separate from the Democratic Party's ideas, or the party, or the organization's ideas. Oh, we talked about it in house. We argued and fought about them in house, the different ideas, conservative, the progressives, the people in the middle, all that went down. Yes, it did. You can't help that when you have an organization of people with different ideas. And so about how things ought to be done. So you make an arena in an organization when you build that organization for those kinds of disputes to be dealt with, brought out, agreed to, disagreed to, going with, we go with it, we don't go with it, whatever, it all goes down inside. When we come out the door from these meetings, we come out unified. We come out as a unified organization, united in our efforts. We don't come out the door running to the mic, expressing our particular ideas as they differ from our party's ideas. What kind of shit is that? We don't do that. If you got a political party, if you got an organized organization, and maybe it's not structured properly, I don't know. I'm not in there internally. And so Steve Bannon, a Republican, member of the last administration, of the Trump administration, for a while, just the other day, proposed that the Republican Party adopt Joe Manchin into the Republican Party. Now, guys, it's very strategic, and Steve Bannon is a strategic kind of guy. This is strategic in the sense that if you got just as many Democrats as you got Republicans, or maybe you got one extra or whatever, it gave you a majority, and you only got one extra. If they can get just one of you, one of your guys to come over to their side, you cease to be the majority. And Bannon knows that. So he wants the Republican Party to coat Joe Manchin and to get him over to the Republican side. Because he saw that hole, he saw that breach in the party. Now, Bernie Sanders could do the same thing if he wanted to with the progressives of the Democratic Party. They could all go after Pelosi. They could all go after each other, whatever. They got different ideas. But he hasn't done that. Still, why would you do that? Okay, you got ideas. Why don't you wait till the next, if you're running, now one of the reasons I figure you could do that, you would do that, is if you want to run for president one day. So the first time you get a mic, you start talking about your ideas. What you think ought to be done. you're a member of the Democratic Party. You nominated a president, a Democrat for president. The Democrat is president now. That makes him the titular head of the party. Why would the head of the party have opposition, verbal, public opposition from his own party on these microphones in front of these cameras? Talking about their disagreements and different ideas and different approaches, etc. We don't mind hearing your ideas and approaches. Why don't you wait till election time? Why don't you wait till election time and then give us your ideas and your approach and how they're so much better or whatever? And then maybe you'll be president and you can promote those ideas. But you, these guys, these folks look like they're running for office when they get a microphone in their face. The election is over. You've elected a president. You've nominated a president, and that president won. Where's the unity? Where's the public face of unity? Where's unity in the face of the opposition? You don't put your dirty laundry on the street, guys. It's just like a marriage or a relationship or something in a community. You know that, say for instance, you know that there are people who'd like to see your marriage broke up. They can't wait to find some cracks to needle into your marriage. They can't wait to find some weak spots. And just as sure as you put your mess out in the streets, they're going to take advantage of those weak spots to break your marriage up, your relationship up. You can have all the arguments you want in the house. But if you know that there are folks out there who would like to see this thing come to an end and you don't want it to, you don't broadcast those issues in public. You resolve them in-house, if at all possible. Or you go your separate ways. That's the same thing with any organization. Should be. There's no unity there. What kind of organization is this Democratic Party? I saw, when Hillary was running for office, I saw somebody come from a different party. Yeah, and I'm talking Bernie Sanders, guys. I saw somebody come from an independent party, a different party, and ran as a Democrat for president. How about that? What kind of shit is that? What kind of shit is that? You become president. Now you're the head of a party you don't even agree with. You started your own party. You're a member of a separate party, obviously. You had years to become a Democrat. But now you want to run the Democratic Party, or you want to become president and as a nominee of the Democratic Party. And one, and if you won, you become the leader of the Democratic Party. So are you particular, is that a, what kind of move is that? Why don't you run as an independent party, the party you belong to? How you skip parties just like that so you can be president? Well, it almost looked like usurping the Democratic Party. I can run the Democratic Party even though I've never walked in their doors, even though I've done anything to build the Democratic Party, even though I'm not out there lobbying for the Democratic Party, I'm not out there organizing for the Democratic Party. I didn't spend years building the Democratic Party. But I can become the leader of that damn party overnight. What is that? What kind of party is that that allows that kind of thing to happen? Anybody can run for president. But yeah, you're an independent, you run as an independent. What's this shit about, I'm going to run as a Democrat? You're not a Democrat. You never was. That's bullshit on its face. That's disingenuous. That's disingenuous just on prima facie face. I'm running to be the leader of a party that I never joined, that I don't want to join, that I wouldn't join any other day of the week. In fact, I belong to a whole separate party. Now, guys, don't get me wrong. I understand the game. The game is we only got two parties that folks are going to vote for primarily. We got a lot of political parties. We got people who run for office for the Green Party, Independent Party, the Green Party. So there's plenty of parties, but ultimately it comes down to the Democrats and Republicans. Ultimately, it comes down to a two-party system. And so if you do want to run for president of the country, it's convenient for you, then, maybe it's necessary for you, I don't know how you think about it, to jump parties, to get that nominee, to get that nomination from a different party, the Democrats, and you never was a Democrat. You don't have the goals of the Democratic Party. Now, as an organizer, myself, building an organization from the ground, we had a constitution and bylaws. Members of the party agreed to those constitution and bylaws to become a member. They work for the party. Now, part of membership in the party is duties and responsibilities. And one of those duties is to promulgate and build the party. You didn't build the party. You didn't help build the party. You were in a different party. But now you're going to be the... Somehow, you're going to end up leading the party that you never wanted to join in the first place. So you could be president. Now, some people will say, hey, if everybody ran at their own parties, then they would take votes away from the Democrats or the Republicans. Well, c'est la vie. If that's the case, that's the case. But it's a two-party system, and so somebody's going to win from one of those two parties, and if you want to be a winner, I guess you have to join one or run as one or something. But my goodness, what kind of politics is that? So the title of this presentation, guys, was Democrat and Republican parties are political parties in name only. These are not political parties. And I'm talking Democrats today because I see it more with the Democrats than I see with the Republicans. I see them standing together, you know, as ridiculous sometimes as it looks, I see them standing together more so than I see Democrats. If the party is unified in public, if it's unified against its opposition, it's a powerful party. If they can't even agree with their leadership, if they disagree with their leadership, you do it in-house. You square these disagreements away in-house. And when we walk out the door, you shut your mouth. Nobody should even know that Joe Manchin didn't agree with the party on certain issues, his own party. Nobody should even know that Omar and AOC and them guys disagree with how Biden is doing things. It ain't our business. That's internal business. You can tell us all of that when you're running for office. That's a campaign slogan. But I'm seeing these folks get on the mic and they want to express their ideas like they're running for office. And maybe they are. And maybe they are. Guys, there's a way to deal with that. I'll tell you how an organization is built that's strong, that's powerful. It don't look like this. This is a mess. You can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. But the political parties out here today, I don't know, they're a fucking social club. It's just a social club, a knitting circle. That ain't the way you build an organization. You want to know what a real organization looks like? I tell you what. I'll be back, and we'll talk about that. Let me give you a little music. Listening to Blog Talk Radio's Revolutionary Life. My name is Gary. I'm your host tonight. And tonight, here on Revolutionary Life, we're talking about politics. In particular, guys, we're talking about party politics. There's organizations out there calling themselves Democratic and Republican parties. When I look at the Democratic Party, for instance, I have to, as an organizer, as someone trained in organizing, building organizations, ground up, from the Constitution and bylaws to the activities. I don't see a unified party. I see a hodgepodge of ideas. And that's okay to have different ideas. We got different people. They come in with different ideas. And when they're running for office, they express those ideas. But when their leadership has to look behind his back, because every time the conservatives or the progressives in his party get in front of a microphone, they start politicking. They start expressing their ideas. They start expressing how they would do things as opposed to their leaders, their leader, their nominated leader of the party, their titular head of the party, the president. What kind of shit is that? There's no unity there. That sounds like a bunch of people running for office and can't wait to get a mic to express how progressive they are, or to express how conservative they are. They can do that if they're running for office. But you don't run for office in the middle of a presidency. It's done. Election's over. You kick in. That's what you do. You kick in with your party, and you back it, and you back your leadership. Nobody should see a crack in that party publicly, even though y'all might be having fist fights in the back room. But when you come out that door, the opposition should see a unified party, and it doesn't. And that's supposed to be okay. Well, it is okay for a social club, but that's not a political party. Somebody once said, and I can think it was this historian. It was a war historian by the name of Clausewitz. Clausewitz said politics Clausewitz says war is politics by another means. If you were in the military, the green machine, and you're going up against a real enemy, you don't hit that field. You don't go out there with dissent in the ranks. You're going to lose. I don't care how much equipment you got or whatever, or what the plan is. If everybody's got a plan and it's different from the leader's plan, from the commander's plan, then you ain't unified. Ain't no green machine. That ain't no military. That's a bunch of people with their own guns and ideas. When in the last presidency, guys, you might remember this. In the last presidency, Donald J. Trump went over to visit the military. And the word came out that he was passing out MAGA hats. It drove military generals crazy. Their heads spin around. Because the last thing they need is those men in uniform to go into battle and have dissent within the ranks based on who you voted for or what politics you have. The military ain't just one party of people. The military is a bunch of different people from a bunch of different places. You know that. And of course, they got their own ideas about politics and everything else. But when they're in war, they are unified. You can't tell the difference from a Trump supporter and an Obama supporter. The enemy should never know the difference. The enemy should never see those kind of weaknesses in dissent in your military, because they will play off of those. Yes, they will. They'll play off of those. Guys, in Vietnam, the Vietnam War, those of you old enough to remember, black soldiers, African-American soldiers in the Vietnam War, would talk about often seeing signs. And these, it's interesting. Even though they were patrolling these areas and they were pretty sure there was no enemy in the area, when they got up the next morning, they would see signs posted all over the place. And guess what some of these signs said? Soul brother, go home. Soul brother, why are you here? That was the enemy talking to black soldiers. Soul brother, the Viet Cong have never lynched you. Why are you here? Soul brother, go home. Posters, psychological warfare by the other side, because they played on the racism. They played on the breach that they saw, or they tried to. So a political party is an organization. It's not a military organization. But Lord have mercy. Where's the unity? Where's the strength? Where's the power of this organization if it can't keep its dirty laundry in the house? Now, I told you when I left here that I have experience as training, really, as a professional organizer. Damn near 20 years. Community organizing, political organizing, labor organizing, even. And when I learned to build an organization from the ground up, when I went into a community to build that organization around an issue in the community, well, that organizational structure included within it an area for dissent. Dissent was welcomed if it was handled in-house. Dissent was welcomed. That was a path. That was a path in these organizations that I helped to build. That was a path for one person in that organization to change the whole course of that organization. Yes, sir. One person, not to mention 10 or 20. Caucus. But I guarantee you something. No matter what our disagreements were, we worked it out in the house before we went outdoors. We didn't go out and hit the streets. We didn't go out and push our organizational effort with a bunch of people saying different things, criticizing the organization, their own ideas about how the organization ought to run. Those ideas are good, good or bad. They're handled in-house. The public should see specifically the opposition party, should see a unified party when they hit the street or walk in the room. Because if they don't, they're going to pick it apart. I told you. Steve Bannon was in the paper last week, and he was asking the Republican Party to draft Joe Manchin, a Democrat, into the Republican Party. And he was serious because it was a good move. It was a slick move because the majority would have been lost. The Democrats would have lost majority in the House just losing that one guy. So that was a strategic move. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's only because they saw the breach in the party. It would be like Bernie Sanders trying to recruit the progressives in the Democratic Party to the Independent Party, where he came from. He hasn't done that, as far as I can tell. And so a party structure is built for dissent. It's built for disagreements. It's built to be changed by the members of that party. But all that disagreements and all those possible changes and proposals for changes and ways of going about doing things are handled in the House. You don't grab a microphone. You don't get in front of a microphone and start talking about how you would do things differently. How you wanted this, but the president is going to do that. And so you don't support that. Or you, even if you do support it, you would have done it differently. Well, who did do? Talk to your party members about it. Talk to the leadership about it. Don't talk to me. Don't bring your dirty laundry out here in the streets, your disagreements or whatnot, unless you run for office. And you have a time to do that called election time. And so, as an organizer, guys, I put this presentation out here together because I don't see an organization. I see a social club. I don't see anything unified about it. And the opposition don't either. That's why they're trying to pick it apart. I told you, Steve Bannon from the Trump administration is trying to lobby the Republican Party to draft Joe Manchin. And he wasn't joking because it would be a hell of a strategic move in terms of who's the majority in the House. If Joe Manchin has a problem with a Democratic president, his leader, the leader of the party, the nominated by the party leader, he takes it up with the leader. And if the leader changes his mind or changes his program based on the conversation with Joe Manchin, Joe Manchin gets his way. But if the leader says, no, we're going to do it this way, and I have the majority of the party on my side, I need you, in the interest of unity of will, that's a concept, that's a concept in a party meeting where the minority disagrees with the majority. If it can't be worked out, I need you, in the interest of unity of will, to accept the majority's position. And if you don't, there's another arena within the party where you can argue again for your position and try to get more people on your side, caucuses. But if you can't, then you put your position in your pocket. When you walk out that door, nobody should know y'all had any disagreements. Nobody should know that any disagreements exist with the leadership's position. That's a party. That's a party. if you had a marriage and y'all got some issues, you handle them in-house, don't you? If you knew there were people who didn't want your marriage to succeed, would you put your dirty laundry and disagreements out there in the streets for opportunists to try to tear your relationship apart? No, you wouldn't. You know better. What's going on with the so-called party? Or is it a party? Or just a social club? People, Democrats, or are they not? Does that party have the ability? Does that party have an arena in it where disputes can be handled in-house? Where one person can turn that party around, but all that takes place in-house. And then when the president steps out, he has unity behind him. He has a united party pushing the position that the party had decided on behind closed doors. After all the arguments and the disagreements have been put on the table. Now, decision-making in a party internally could be done by consensus. Consensus decision-making makes a way for dissent to occur in the party. And again, like I said, a consensus to say, if y'all can't come to a consensus, not an agreement, not blindly following the leader, nobody's saying that. The word is a consensus. You consent. Then after the party breaks up, if you leave the party, if you're talking to me personally and my personally, you can tell me how you disagree. But there's an opposition out there to the Democratic Party. I remember the Republican Party when Obama became president. I remember the head of the Republican Party saying they were going to make him a one-term president. That's an opposition. I remember the Republican Party refusing to even meet with Supreme Court nominees under Obama administration, because they said it was too close to the election. We should have the election first so that that new president can put the Supreme Court, can make the nominees. It was about 6 weeks to 2 months away from the election. The Republican Party under Donald Trump proposed Supreme Court nominees a week before, maybe two, before the election. And the Democrats sit down and met in committees with the Supreme Court nominees. The Democrats didn't do the same thing the Republicans did to them, even though they had every right. It wasn't months before the election. It was months before, at least 2 months, before the election between Obama the Obama election. Was that Hillary election? I'm sorry, guys. But no, it's too close to the election, they said. It's weeks before the election. Months before the election, they refused to hear Democrat proposal for Supreme Court justice. Wouldn't even meet with the guys. That's an opposition. You know you got an opposition. And then your conservatives are going to speak their mind in front of the mic on how they publicly oppose what's going on. And your progressives are going to talk about how they publicly oppose, would do things differently, et cetera, et cetera. What is that? The only thing I can figure is these people running for office. But they're not waiting for an election. They're just waiting for a mic and a TV camera, a news camera stuck in their face. And they want to talk about how progressive they are than the president is. Well, shit, talk about that during an election. Don't talk about that now. It's too late to be voicing your political position. You can voice it in-house. I don't want to hear it. You got a president. Titular leader, your party. Follow the leader. You know what? My old man, old dude, used to say, whether you voted for the president or not, he's your president now. We will follow the president. I didn't understand that as a young man. I didn't like the president. But he says, whether you like him or not, whether you voted for him or not, the election's over, he's the president, you follow the president. My old man used to say that. I wasn't a member of the president's political party. The members of the president's political party won't stand behind this president. Why even join the party? And so, that's my rant, guys. And not only because I'm coming from an organizer point of view. An organizer is built for dissent. An organization is built with arenas of dissent in it. An organization is built so that any one person in that organization can change the whole path of that organization. There's a path for that. There's a way made for that to happen inside the party. There's a decision-making process where the minority person, be it a progressive or a conservative, can argue their position and maybe change the platform. Maybe get more people to come to their side. Maybe come to a consensus. But if they can't, they will be asked to submit, to put their position in their pocket in the interest of unity of will. Because we're about to walk out that door, and there's an opposition out there just waiting to see us fall apart. They want to talk about Biden's rambling on and all that good shit. So they're already on his case. Now they can use, you know, they tried to say that Omar and Ilhan Omar and AOC, they tried to say that these four women, I think it is, are telling Biden what to do. They're using the progressives to turn people against Biden, the people who are listening, me and you, against Biden, because they're saying he's being run by these progressives. They're telling him what to do and not to do. He's a puppet of these progressives in the party. You got Steve Bannon on the other end said, let's adopt Joe Manchin into the Republican Party, the conservative and the Democratic Party of the Democratic Party. They're going to try to tear this party apart, and they're using you, Democrats, to do it. How about that? Keep your dirty laundry in the house. That's my point. These are not political parties. Not one I would have built. There's not even a community organization I would have built, let alone a political organization or a labor organization. That's my rant. All right, guys. I already got callers. And this part of the show I open up for you guys. And I call it your time to shine. My phone number, area code 319-527-6060. 319-527-6060. I'm going to open up my chat room also. And so if you have questions, hang on a minute. Try my chat room. If you have questions, comments, what's going on with my chat room? What? 8:20, 9:23, no sound. Oh, come on now. Hang on a minute, guys. Is it true I got no sound? All right, try calling me somebody or hit me in the chat if that chat is open right now. But I'm pretty sure I thought I was on now. Anyway, let's try it again, guys. This is my call. This is the call-in section. So you're free to call. And I don't know what's going on with this program, guys. Let me see if I can get a caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes.
This is Gary.
Yes. Good evening. I go by the name of Brother Warren. I'm a host of a blog talk show called New Orleans Wake Up. And I was just enjoying your monologue, your commentary about the political parties. I have voted over the last few decades of my life for the Democratic Party, of course, like most black people, because of historical reasons. I did vote the Green Party for a couple of presidential elections some years ago. However, it is clear that we, and I'm using we as African-American people, we don't always understand the motives and the intentions of white people who identify with either party. And a lot of times we get emotionally vested in this case for the last 60 years or so, the Democratic Party, because, of course, it has expressed through many of its politicians support for civil rights agenda. But
right. It
just looking like that we have just pretty much worn out the flavor in the bubblegum called political party, whether it be Democrat or Republican. And
yeah.
So I'm seeing a consistent, solid Republican side that continues to maintain. And if you notice how they'll disagree, but then they'll keep a front. Then they'll say one thing one day, then they'll say another thing. I'm talking about Republicans now when it comes to, example, the January 6th riots, the January 6th insurrection and the things that Trump said. You get Lindsey Graham flip-flop every day like a panther.
Yeah.
But they all maintain like a united front. You're part on the progressive fringe in the Democratic Party. You were saying what people are saying about them is interesting. But what I find problematic is you don't see the obviously the Congressional Black Caucus have become, not that I just discovered this, but obviously they've become the status quo corporate like the white people, you know? Because I don't see them making a collective voice like the three ladies, Ilhan Omar, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, and Talib, I can't think of her name, and then the other sister who come out of what other sister, you know, the one.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Right. So why is it just those who are banging the door of the Democratic establishment as opposed to that? I'll listen to your response to some of the things I see.
All right. Thank you for calling in, caller. And I sure appreciate it. We are on the same page here because for sure these organizations calling themselves political parties are like gangs. And the Republican Party, and you're right on this, man, because the Republican Party's got people like this woman, Collins, like Rand Paul. I've seen them disagree verbally in front of a camera with where the Republican Party was going. But when it was voting time, boom, they vote straight Republican down the line. And so you think they might be in opposition to their party. It might look like it to you. Like Collins might say, well, I think something, whatever needs to happen, you know, different from what the Republican Party is saying. But once his vote comes down, boom, they fall in line. Mm-hmm. And I see more unity over there. Even their message is more consistent. Right. I remember when they were talking about whether everybody agreed that Obama was the legitimate president. Mm-hmm. And or the same thing with Biden. Was that election legitimate? And some of them hemming and hawing around that issue today, whether mm-hmm. Biden is whether that election was rigged or not, rather than saying, no, it was a good election. Biden is president. He's my president, just like he's yours. And taking it that way. But they'll be hemming and hawing because they don't want to say they've fallen party line. Well, okay with me. Mm-hmm. I think the Democrats could take a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Given their opposition, given who they're up against, they're going to have to unify. And like I said, that doesn't mean anybody has to hush up. There are areas of dissent within the organization. They can put their position forward. They can caucus. The Black Caucus is a caucus. They got enough members, hopefully, to sway the opinion in the party. That's what you do when you want to sway the opinion in the party. But you do that stuff in-house. I mean, after the election is over, man, I told you, My father, he's gone now, but the old man used to say, I don't care if you elected the president or not. I don't care if you like him or not. He's the president now. You got to get behind him. He used to say that, and I didn't like that. But that's the way he felt. Once the man is voted in, put your signs down. You know, follow your president. Now, whatever you think of that, these guys in the Democratic Party, members of the Democratic Party, needs to come out as a block, as a united party, because they're going to get torn apart. And like I said before, it's the strangest thing to me that somebody can come from another party and become the leader of the Democratic Party, somebody who didn't build the Democratic Party, comes from another party, runs for president, and if they win, they're leadership of the Democratic Party. They run as a Democrat. Now, I got that. I know there's two parties in the long run, so you got to be one or the other, I suppose, if you're going to win. But that makes a party that is uncertain about its position. It's a jellyfish. It's got no skeleton. It's got no backbone, and so it can be picked apart, and it will be. They're all over Biden. Every time he makes a mistake or a misstep, the last thing he needs is members of his own party messing with him today. You know what I mean? So maybe I disagree, maybe I agree with my old man who used to say, you know, it's your president now, whether you voted for him, whether you like him. It's the president. We got to follow the president. Whether I disagree with that or not, I wasn't a member of the president's party or the opposition party at the time. But the member of the party, members of the party come down getting on the mic and expressing their ideas and stuff like they're running for office or something. I don't know. Like I told you, I have a history of organizing. And I've helped to build organizations from the ground up, from the paperwork up. And let me tell you, there's arenas built into organizations, well-built organizations, for dissent. But you don't put your dirty laundry out in the street because there's an opposition just waiting to find some way to bring you down. And so you're right. I mean, today there needs to be, I mean, I don't know. Man, there needs to be another that party needs to get its stuff together.
Well, one of the things I've noticed leading up to this last election is that the coalitions in the Democratic Party are fragile. And the black vote itself is easily to peel away a certain percentage. And we saw the conservative Republicans woo a significant black vote, at least males, in the, I want to say, first 2016 election and the 2020 election. In fact, you started hearing a lot of people in various sectors of the black community begin to express support for Trump. So I would say the Democratic Party has a challenge of keeping as many black voters as they can this time because these coalitions, and I'm talking particularly about the black vote, is not as loyal as it had been. We see that now.
Now, they're playing politics. That's what they're playing. And so they'll flip around. They do what they have to do to try to stay in office, I guess. I don't know. The black vote or the black caucus and the issues that concern African-American people in this country are being, there's a whole thing going on now where they want to put that whole history, our black history, out of the history books, especially the oppression that blacks have faced and exploitation in this country for centuries, not a couple of years, centuries. And they want to take, what is it called, critical race theory. They don't want to hear that. We don't need to talk about that. Let's move on. And it seems to me that Black Caucus and some others out there go along with that. Let's put that behind us like that's over with. At the same time, we got the Proud Boys and the Nazi Party and the white supremacists out there. We can't put that behind us. At the same time, you want to take down a Confederate statue. They start lining up around, you know, that's history. That's history, da-da-da-da-da. We can't put that behind us, but we got to put the history of African Americans in this country behind us. And some people bought in or sold out to that issue. And so how this country was built is going to be some kind of heroic great men and great events. Like we learned in high school, white men and white great men and great events that we learned in high school. And so, yeah, so I see that happening. And the black vote is getting broken up around that issue. I appreciate you calling, my man. I have another caller just hanging in there waiting
all right
for me.
Thanks.
I'm going to have to get over there. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, caller. You're on the line.
Yes.
You're on the air. This is Gary.
Yes, yes. My name is Nathan in Orlando. I've been listening to your conversation, and I'm mainly interested in some of the stuff you got posted on your page. I want to hit you with something that you probably have never heard of. Okay, on the two parties, I believe that the two parties are one party, but they've got me and you down here divided on the issues, and they take the pressure off of each other from election to election. But here's something I want to point out to you. I'm going to tell you, we know the word systemic racism, government policy that says you can use that bathroom and I can use this bathroom. Okay, we understand that, and it puts people in their places. I'm going to tell you one of the biggest systemic, not just race, but political, economic, you add whatever else that divides us, policy, systemic policy, is in the Constitution. Us congressmen, congresswomen, congresspeople, representatives, are sent to Washington, D.C. to represent the population of a state, not districts. Okay? And that's okay. Why we got these districts mapped out on the map that looks like counties that snakes up over here and then comes back over here. And the two parties get to decide who they want. I'll give you a good example on this. Alan West here in Florida went to Congress, and he was a little bit extreme, especially on challenging the Muslims and stuff because he came from the war. What a Republican said after the first election, coming up on his next election, they said, we're going to redistrict his zone. Or he lost. And then the rules are, if you lose and you're within 500 points, you can call for a recount. Mm-hmm. Alan West called for a recount. The Republican says, no, we don't want to do a recount. In other words, this is what we got to do to get you out of here because we don't want you here. And what bothers me is the Congress members is not there to represent the party, it's to represent us. All of the congressmen in my state of Florida could live right here in Orlando in the same house. They could be roommates together. They don't go up there based on where they live at in the state. You see how that's got us divided? So that's why one district can bring back a whole bunch of money for bridges, roads, or whatever, okay, for whatever projects they got, and another district isn't getting the money they need for their projects, you know. And this is what I'm saying, the politicians have us divided. Now, I'm going to tell you another one. In the Constitution, and I will bet you a finger, I told a guy that teaches the Constitution, I will bet you a finger. You prove me wrong, and we can go to the doctor, and you pick which finger. And I told him I won't include the thumbs because I don't want you to have a problem gripping stuff, okay? There is no electoral college in the Constitution. There is electors. There's electors. Listen, there's electors, and we the people. In the Constitution, it says the federal Congress shall they're supposed to do manage the federal elections, and it says in the Constitution the state has to appoint electors. Now listen to this. Please read this when you get done later on. That's sure. In the article, I believe it's Article 1 or Article 2. But anyway, Article 14 in the Bill of Rights, Article 14, the second paragraph, guess what it says? And this is when the white men got to vote for the first time, because they didn't get to vote back in the day because you had to be a taxpayer. Then after the Civil War, you had to pay poll tax, and that was for not just blacks, but it was poor people too. But listen to this, in the 14th Amendment, it says that you and I, okay, well, back then, the white men, for the first time, they were getting the right to vote. Guess what it says? It says they vote for the electors of president and vice president. They vote for the electors. They vote for the electors, and then they vote for the president and the vice president. There is two candidates on one ticket. We vote for the electors. We vote for the elector, the president, the electors of president and vice president, and the elector for president, and then for president. And here's what it says in the 24th. The right of citizens to vote in open primaries, right there, open primaries, is the law of the land. There is no choice. And the only reason all these things I'm pointing out are two-party rules, but we don't have a two-party political system in the Constitution. It's we the people. But listen, the 24th says, right of citizens to vote in any primary for president and for vice president, and for electors of president and vice president. That means I could vote for you as an elector, and if you won, I can ask you, why did you vote for him? And you can say, get out of my face. I voted my conscience. Do you see how much different America would look if the people were really and not the two parties or the same? Give me some more tracks, especially on the Republicans. If you believe in abortion, you do know that your place is in the Democrat Party, okay? And the Republicans, if you're pro-life, your place is in the Republican Party. But here's the deal. It was George Daddy Bush in 1969 that the bill number is Title X. Her name is Title X. Title X, Daddy Bush wrote that bill that funds Planned Parenthood, and that's before Planned Parenthood was in our mind, okay? And in 69, in 70, Republican President Nixon signed it into law. Now listen to this. In 73, when Roe v. Wade was decided, Again, this is one of the things I'll bet my finger on. I'm willing to go to the wall and bet my life on this. In 73, seven of the nine justices that ruled for Roe v. Wade were Republican-appointed judges. Okay? Now, but listen, here's where they've gotten the religious right deceived. Religious right is out here, and they basically got a pro-life industry going. They got these groups. They're riding or flying around debating and trying to lobby pro-life with the politicians, and then they write books. There's seminars, and I'm glad that they are trying to save these babies' lives. But guess what? It ain't never going to end because it's the Republicans are the ones that gave us this abortion and abortion. And whenever I try to get some of these politicians or some of these people that are in position, political junkie positions, to yell out, all we need to stop Planned Parenthood to bring abortion back to the states is just call on Congress to repeal Title X. That means no more federal money goes in. Planned Parenthood can go make their money. They can get other people donate to it. They can do whatever. They can have a bake sale if they want. But you see what I'm saying is they got me and you fussing on the issue of and hating each other down here at the bottom on the issue that we disagree with. And it's the two parties are one. But on that thing with the, we don't have a two-party political system in the Constitution. And on the Electoral College, and I'm going to give you something here. On the Electoral College, this is what I've heard all of my life. If we repealed, you can't repeal it, but if we repealed the Electoral College in the Constitution, you can't repeal what's not there. You can say no booze, okay, we're going to repeal that, now you can drink booze. Okay, you can't repeal something that's not there. But this is what they say. If we got rid of the electoral colleges, this is what the Democrats would do. They would have all the Democrats vote for this Republican that can lose in the general election, the Democratic can vote for the electors. But guess what? Rush Limbaugh did that. Rush Limbaugh in 2008 did a thing called Operation Chaos, where all the states where Obama was real strong, he had these ditto heads in that state, and if we were a nation of laws, that would have been criminal. But listen, he had people in these states, these criminals, they had these criminals that were Republicans would vote, switch to Democrat and then vote for Hillary in the primary, and then they switch back to Republican, and they're going to vote for McCain in the general. And the Republican Party, they didn't even mess with the primaries. What they just did, the Republican Party automatically put Obama up because they already seen that Hillary can't win with Obama in these states. I mean, against McCain in these. Here's what I'm saying. I'm throwing both of the parties under the bus because what they got is me and you divided. We can't sit down and talk about something we disagree with. We've got to hate each other and go get in our groups and just not have anything to do with us when we might be able to teach somebody or each other something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, now, I agree. And I thank you for that.
Let me give you one more opinion before you comment and before I hang up. I will say this, and I hope it doesn't offend you, and if it does, you know, give me the room to disagree. You know, on the Black Caucus and the Hispanic Caucus, that too is not constitutional. We're just we're making up our own way without the Constitution. But what that is that the Black Caucus, and I understand you got to look out for your people, but it's not constitutional. All the congressmen are supposed to go up there to represent the people. And here's what I think. If you got a group of people on a ship, they're going to go on a cruise, right? And this ship got shipwrecked, and we had no communications, and we just figured we lost them at sea. And they landed on an island someplace, and somebody in that group had a copy of the Constitution. They could form a government. Now, they don't have what our problem in the beginning of being under war, trying to break away from England, and then all the other issues. And so they had to cut corners to make things happen, and they didn't do everything as thorough as what they said that their plan was. But listen, when we find that island, And we see this government, they produced, it would be nothing we recognize. Because we've
probably
been making
not.
Stuff up as we go.
Thank you for that.
Yes, I'm going to hang up and keep listening. But if you would, consider what I say. Go look. Read the Constitution. This is what it says.
Yes.
Congress shall prescribe law on the election laws. The only thing they can do, they cannot do, is places. They make the laws about the elections. The states don't make the law. At the end of every amendment in the Bill of Rights, at the very end of every, all 28 of them, it's written 28 times, the end of the amendments, there's one more article that says Congress shall enforce with appropriate legislation, and they haven't. They say to the states, what are y'all going to do? We're going to have closed parties. Because which means only Democrats and Republicans get the vote in the primary. But I'll tell you one more thing, and then I'll hang up. In my city here of Orange County, Orlando, okay, they tell us we're divided down the middle. I went to the Orange County Supervisor of Elections, and this is what we got: 43% of registered voters are Democrats, 25%. Is the Republicans, and 28% is no party affiliates. I found that to be consistent in all the counties across the country. Not all of them. I've looked at a lot of them, not all of them. But in other states, they're called independents. But there's enough people breaking off as independents that's saying we don't want nothing to do with this party. And the Republicans are losing their shorts on it. Yet the Republicans, by the no party affiliates, is more than 100,000 here. The no party affiliates has more than 100,000 voters than the Democrats do. I think it's 150,000 more. So you know what? They keep telling the independents or the no party affiliates, well, y'all need to vote with us, because if you don't, this Democrat's going to win. I vote non. This is what I do. I vote for only citizen candidates who have a consistent resume. But anyway, let me hang up and keep listening.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
I have, thank you, caller. The caller pointed out some very interesting things, guys, and I want you to notice this. If you're looking at my site, there is also, I have also posted some pictures on the site. A couple of things on the site that speak to the Constitution's, the United States Constitution and political parties in general. I even have a quote from John Adams on my site, on the slide that goes, the presentation that slideshow that goes on as you're watching the site. You'll see a quote from John Adams warning us about the dangers of these opposition of these political parties, and that the Constitution initially didn't make arrangements for political parties, two opposition parties. And so, but we end up with two opposition parties. But here's the thing, too. I'm going to just put my point across. My point is that the government and the people of the United States, of this government, of this nation, it's okay for me for them to have an opposition party, for there to be two wings, a left and a right. A bird got two wings. A plane got two wings, a left and a right. But a left and a right might have some disagreements. But you know the country is not going to fly if both wings are not working together. Now, I don't mean that they have to fight and kill each other to be opposition. I don't mean they have to agree with everything each other say. But to move the nation forward, for the nation to fly, literally fly, for this country to be that shining sentinel on the hill they used to talk about. Both parties at some point have to coordinate. Right and left wings have to be in coordination or the bird don't fly. And even if he does, he just goes around in circles if one wing's running things other than the other wing getting their way. It's all about who gets their way, it seems. And so I believe, I have no problem with a two-party system necessarily, but I or an opposition party necessarily. But once an election has been held, if it's a free and fair election, let's put it that way, then it's time to fly. That means that both wings now have to work it out. If you got two parts, if you got a left hand and a right hand, they got to work together to make shit happen. If you got one wing against the other wing, then you ain't flying. You ain't going nowhere. I want to see this nation move. This is the 21st century, man. This is the 21st century. We have an racial arguments. We have an, we're still having these. My man here mentioned something that I think he was describing, something called gerrymandering. Gerrymandering. Outlining your district so that more of the people in your and that outline and that district that you just outlined would be vote would be Republicans or Democrats, and so you're sure to get elected. And they can redraw your district and put some Democrats in there, and if you're a Republican, you might not get elected. And so they can play games. There's so many games. It's called politics, baby. But there's so many games that they can play to get power and to stay in power that you and my interest is the least, is secondary to winning elections. And if you want to, if you a flip-flopper, if you, you know, we, all the politics, we can't get people to trust politics. I mean, everybody's got a political joke. Politicians are like da-da-da-da-da. Everybody's got to, because we don't trust them. It's innate in this culture now. And so to have a government that you can't believe, to have a government that you can't trust, to have a government that you don't know if the person that you sent there is going to stick with what they said when you sent them there, you begin to say, well, hey, all politicians are corrupt. I've heard that before. And who knows? Maybe they go in there with good intentions. Maybe they care about the people that they represent. And they're fighting for their interests. Maybe so. But it looks more and more like, let's do what we need to do to win. It's kind of like the... it's kind of like this problem looking for a solution that's going on in Georgia, where they're tightening up on who can vote where, when, how long, what days. And they're saying, and the excuse they're using is to prevent voter fraud. And how many times have these election officials come out across the country and said there's always some fraud? But there's never been enough to be significantly changing anything. But they're overthrowing all of that. They're deciding that they can decide who the electoral is going to be, the electoral college is going to be. If they don't like them, they can throw them out and get some more. Get a whole nother batch. In Arizona, they still recounting votes, baby. And this guy's been in office over 100 days now, or well, longer. And so it's a mess. It's a mess. And once you lose, once a government loses the respect, the trust of the people they govern, fewer and fewer people are going to vote. Now, there are some countries, guys, whether you know it or not, that has a vote called a no-confidence vote. We don't have that here. But there are some countries where if you don't like neither of the two people running, you can vote no confidence, and they have to wipe those guys and start all over again with some new folks. And if the people, if the number of people in this country who don't even bother to go vote, and that's getting to be more and more people, were actually a vote, if you counted that as a vote, they'd... The people who don't vote would outnumber the ones who do every time. And everybody who do, most everybody who do has got an agenda. And so they're voting for their agenda, whether it's abortion, taxes, military, whatever. They're voting for their particular issue. But at some point, guys, at some point, if the United States of America, if this country founded less than 200 years ago, well, a little over 200 years ago, sorry, less than 300, a little over 200, that's a young country, by the way. That's a young country. And whenever you point towards older countries, the old world, England, France, Germany, people who've been around for centuries running countries, from when they had kings and queens to now when they have parliaments, you know, there's something called best practices. We are a young country. It's a little arrogant to think that we don't have something to learn from countries that were countries before this, when this place was still colonies, before they were colonies. Hundreds of years old. These countries had to deal with Roman armies. That's how far back they go. So you've been running government that long. Maybe you got something to teach. But nobody wants us to point to these other governments and say, this is what they're doing, this is how they're doing it. Best practices, man. I mean, learning from the elders. We're too young. We got a long ways to go. You know, slavery in this country was in the 60s. There was slavery in this country before it was a country. 1600s. And then 1700s, that's another century. Then 1800s, there's another century. Almost. And then we passed the law in 1865. Well, guys, it's 20-something. And then we went into Jim Crow. Well, my man here who just, the last caller, was just saying that the government sanctioned separation of bathrooms and restaurants. You could put white only on one water fountain. And then the water holes, or the spigot sticking out the wall down at the bottom, could be for blacks. While the white water fountain was a big square, cooled, air-conditioned or cooled, refrigerated or whatever, cooled water fountain. And our country sanctioned that. Another 100 years of Jim Crow. So come on. We've been apartheid country. Longer than we have been a country that had rules against races and discrimination. So we got a long ways to go. But we can make a long story short, maybe, if we look back at some countries that have been around longer than we have. Before this was a country, there were people organizing governments in Europe. And so I hate to say it, and that's where they got the no confidence vote. And in some European countries, there's something called a no confidence vote. If you don't like the people running, none of them, you vote no confidence. And they have to throw them out and start over again. The people have more control in Germany now, and France, and even England, than we do. You know what some guy told me who was from France, who was here in this country? He said, you know what? He said, I've learned an interesting thing about your country. He said, my country, the government is scared of the people. Because labor unions, everybody hit the streets when it's protest time or whatever. He says, but in your country, the people are scared of the government. In my country, the government is scared of the people. In your country, talking about the United States, it seems like the people are afraid of the government. He noticed the difference. I want to thank everyone who called in today or listened in today. We're riding down, guys, but I want to remind you that this show is called Revolutionary Life, and we deal with all aspects of our lives, things that affect our lives directly and indirectly. The difference is that here we try to deal with them from a revolutionary point of view, and revolution is just change, and there's some things that need to be changed in this nation. And it ain't nothing new and different, guys. We could take a cue from the old guys, from the people who've been running countries before we were a country. You know, they got universal health care in most of these places. England, Germany, people come out of the hospital with their brand new baby, and you put a microphone in their face and ask them how much it costs to have that baby, and they have no idea. Centralized healthcare in Europe, and I hope we don't have to go through this, guys, but in Europe, they had several devastating plagues that almost wiped out the European population. From England to Germany to France, you name it. They were dropping like flies. Cholera, E. coli, shit in the water. They built a sewage system and centralized their health care because they realized that you can't build an advanced industrialized country without it. Best practices, guys. We can learn from the old folks. We're young as a country. And maybe we're trying to go our own way. But that's the way young folks do. Young folks think they got it going on, like the world just started when they started their country. I want to thank everyone for listening in. Just keep in mind that Revolutionary Life is here every weekday night, Monday through Friday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Tonight we had a little glitch, guys. I had to do a part two of this show because the sound on this program just went out. I'm going to have to talk to them about that. But folks were saying, I can't hear you. And my stuff was working fine. And so we had to do a part two. But hopefully that won't happen tomorrow, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll be back. If you want to follow us, you want to know when we're live, just hit that follow button. There should be a follow button on my site up in the upper left-hand corner. Hit that follow button and you'll be notified when we're live, when we're on the air. And you'll have a little heads up on what the topic's going to be. Also, next to that follow sign, there's a share sign. And so if you know people who are interested in these types of subjects, share it with them. If you're not, you know some people who are into politics, who are thinking about running even. And Lord have mercy, I hate sending people into that meat grinder, that political machine, because sometimes they don't come out quite right because it's a machine. And so, thank you again. All of our shows are archived. That is to say, everything that we do here is recorded and put on demand. So if you're on my site and you stroll down, you will see several shows, all of our shows, actually, by topic, on demand. And just click on one of them shows and you're on the show. You're listening to a recording of the show. Your questions, your comments can be taken on those on-demand sites, and I'll see those comments. And so thank you again. We're on our way out, guys. Y'all have a wonderful evening. I want to thank everybody who called in, man. I mean, this stuff got to be talked about from all the angles. Clarity is important more than anything. You can't go forward in the fog. There's some constitutional things about voting and about politics and about parties that have been argued in this country since it started. And folks have found a way to wiggle them way around and even through to where they can get elected, regardless of the people's will. No wonder folks don't trust their own government. I know people who say they love this country. If you don't love it, get out of it. And them same people arm themselves heavily and build militias and whatnot because they're scared of the same government. They love this country, but they're arming themselves against the government. Guys, it's time for change. And it's all revolutionists. The revolutionaries are just people who want to be on the front of change, the vanguard of change. You know, when you're in the front of change, you can probably help direct how it's going to look. If you're on the ass end of change, I guess you won't get a chance to do much of anything. So we try to keep our fingers on the pulse. I'll see you tomorrow night, 7 p.m. to 9, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Gary. This is Revolutionary Life. You have a great night. Thank you. I'm going to give you a little music as we go out. We'll be right back.
Yeah.